This is the next episode of the Cascade Hiker Podcast. This is Beers at the Bottom. Do you drink beer? Do you hike? Well, this is going to be your favorite episode. Check it out. This is the Cascade Hiker Podcast. You're going to find out all the aspects of hiking in our beautiful Pacific Northwest woods.
I'm a country boy with a soft side. My heart wanders up north to the hillside. And I've never met anyone quite as beautiful as you.
Check us out over at CascadeHikerPodcast.com. That's right, CascadeHikerPodcast.com. That's where you're going to find all the show notes and links right there.
Enigmatic like that of the cosmos. Never held.
I want to thank Whiskey Fever for letting me use that awesome track there. That was Tall Grass off their album, Gonna Wake Up This Whole Town. Find them at ReverbNation.com/Whiskey Fever. They're from Cedro Woolley. Go check them out. I'm your host, Rudy Getzik. I put this podcast together to inspire you to get out on the trail. Are you putting in 2-mile hikes, 5-mile hikes? You sitting on the couch? Have you even gone on a backpacking trip yet? I'm going to introduce you to some folks that have done that and a whole lot more. So without further ado, here is the Cascade Hiker Podcast. All right, next on the Cascade Hiker Podcast, what's your name and where are you from?
So I'm Rachel Wood, and I am currently based in Kirkland, Washington.
And I'm Brandon Freilich, based in Bellingham.
And we are Beers at the Bottom.
Yeah, so what is Beers at the Bottom?
So Beers at the Bottom is a blog that we started in July of 2013. So what we do is we go on a hike and then talk about the hike, talk about the experience, and then we link it directly to a nearby brewery. So just an example, like up in Bellingham, if you hike Oyster Dome, then you can follow it up with a pint at Boundary Bay there in Bellingham. So that's kind of just generally how we go about things, kind of covering both sides of it. So the idea is hike first and beer later.
That's cool. Well, so you guys are coming up on 3 years. Is that right then?
Yes. There was a bit of a break there where we both went out of the country for a couple months. I was teaching English in Japan, and Brandon went on an extended kind of travel sojourn in Southeast Asia. So we took a bit of a break after that, kind of just refiguring out what we were doing with ourselves once we got back. So
yeah, but we actually started thinking about it just about 3 years ago in the spring of 2013. We both lived in Bellingham at the time, and we went into Village Books, which is a really great bookstore in Fairhaven, and we were checking out the hiking guide section there and noticed that there were all these niche guides on hiking with kids and with dogs and hiking to waterfalls. And
the Creaky Knees series was one that caught our eye.
Creaky Knees. And so we're thinking, man, there's all these niche guides. And we also noticed near the hiking section that there was this wine trails book, which was not a hiking guide, but it was about like going from winery A to winery B in the most direct route possible. And so that kind of gave us the idea, well, we're going on all these hikes, and we tend to go to breweries afterwards. So why isn't anybody writing about this? And so we decided to start our own blog.
So is the intention then to possibly follow up with a book eventually?
Yes, that was actually literally what came out of our mouths first was, well, we should just write that book. But I studied creative writing at Western Washington University, so I had to temper Brandon's excitement a little bit with the hard facts of getting a book deal. So I was like, let's start off with a blog. That might be a better audience for ourselves. Get our words out there and get sort of a portfolio before we, start storming the publishers. But it worked out as a great platform. It's really led to quite a few opportunities that we wouldn't have had otherwise. And if nothing else, it's a great way for the two of us to just connect in a more fun way, you know.
Yeah. So what type of opportunities are you talking about?
Well, so actually, Rachel works as a craft beer copywriter now.
Yes, and I think that definitely came from the fact that I was able to say, oh yeah, I've written quite a few articles about craft beer. I'm very knowledgeable on the subject. So they're like, oh, that's exciting. There's not that many people out there that can say that. So
yeah, and that kind of came from we were blogging for a while, and then we started thinking, okay, let's see if we can get published somewhere outside of our own website, you know. So we kind of blindly pitched a couple of publications and got really lucky right from the beginning. We wrote a couple pieces for Seattle Backpackers magazine. And then I pitched Washington Trails magazine, and we got a response from the editor, and he was actually looking for a piece on a travel piece on Bellingham. And so we did that and got in with them. And we've actually been writing with Washington Trails ever since. And that's been a really rewarding relationship.
So the Washington Trails Association?
Yes. So specifically okay. for their magazine, Washington Trails. Our editor there is he's just been so fantastic about being like, yes, please beer it up whenever you can. Our audience really responds to breweries. They did a kind of an informal poll recently with the magazine, and it turns out breweries are the number one after hike destination for many hikers in Washington State. So that was always it's an exciting thing for us to learn, especially coming from the angle that we're coming from. So
yeah, that's great. And so those two publications are pretty good. Do you guys have your eyes set on anything else, and if not, a book?
Yeah, we've worked with a few other places as well. When we were traveling, we did a piece internationally in Japan for a publication called Beer Zen. And that was pretty cool because we wrote it and then they translated it into Japanese. And so we got like this copy in the mail of an article we wrote in English and Japanese. And we're like, okay, we're big in Japan now.
So. Yeah. What was kind of interesting about that too is that Japan is always on the one of those like top five next craft beer destinations worldwide, and it was very funny actually being in Japan for 5 months and noticing that when they say it's up and coming, it's maybe a fraction of what we have in here in Washington State. Like even your most basic grocery store has more craft beer going on than, you know, a specialty shop in Japan. So that was kind of it was a humbling moment that made me feel very happy and fortunate about where we're at as far as good beer.
Yeah. And so for sure. To go back a little bit to your question about like, if we have our sights set on anything, we're always looking for other publications to pitch to, and we've got something coming out with Outdoors Northwest soon, and we're hoping to get in with the Northwest Travel and Life magazine, and then eventually write our own book. We're kind of working on that right now. We're putting together a book proposal.
Nice. Well, one of my prior podcasts is with Greg Johnston. I don't know if you've heard of him before.
I don't think so. What does Greg do?
Yeah, he published he got a book published through the Mountaineers, and it's all about the Washington coast. And so that's a pretty cool episode.
Yeah, we'll have to check that out.
Yeah, Mountaineers is such a great publishing house. Just really fantastic for the outdoor scene here in Washington State, fully through history. Unfortunately, they are a little narrow for our focus with what we're talking about with beer and hiking. So we'd love to be a Mountaineers book, but you know, we definitely understand that they have their own catalog going on. So.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, what got you guys into hiking?
So I grew up here in Washington State, and my parents were big on camping. We went out to Kalaaloc on the Olympic Peninsula every year as I was growing up. But I, you know, hiking was one of those things that always seemed a little bit too adventurous. And then I just found out recently that that's because my mother actually hates hiking. It was just not something that was necessarily introduced to me in my childhood.
Yeah.
But once I moved up to Bellingham to go to college up there, hiking trails are just everywhere. And I kind of realized that hiking is not that different from walking, which I, for some reason, I thought that you had to have the poles and that you were like climbing up mountains when you were hiking. So that was a big realization in my early 20s that it was a lot easier than I thought it was going to be. And then, you know, Brandon and I became roommates, and kind of from there, it became a big part of my life more than it was so before. So.
Yeah, and I'm a Washington native as well. So I grew up, basically, I'm a lifelong hiker. My parents started me young when I was, I don't know, as early as I can remember, I've been hiking. And so we lived down in Skagit Valley. And so that's right there between the Cascades and like the San Juan Islands. And we were going out all the time. My mom actually has a journal from like 1995 of like 50 hikes we went on or something. So yeah, it's just something that I've always been into.
That's cool. So she was kind of blogging in her own right then.
Yeah, like the 90s blogging,
the old style blogging. Yeah,
that's funny. That's probably pretty fun to read though.
It really is. Yeah, it's very interesting.
You'd be like, I could prove it. I was.
Yeah, we've got some old like photos and everything.
Yeah, I'm sure there's like Brandon kicked a rock off the trail.
Like in Skagit County and stuff. So, what do you remember? What your favorite hike was? Or I'm sorry, your first hike.
I do not remember what my first hike was. I was so young. I mean, I could go back to the journal and tell you, but
yeah.
I know we did. We actually did like Lake 22 a lot because that's not in Skagit County. That's down in, I think, Snohomish County.
Yeah, Snohomish, yeah.
But that's like one of my mom's favorite hikes, so we would go down there all the time.
And Rachel, what about you? So you got pretty more fresh stories. What was your favorite first hike?
Actually, I believe my first hike was actually out to the Big Four ice caves when I was probably probably 7 or 8. It was one of the few hikes that my father was able to sort of trick my mother to going on when we were camping out at Gold Basin. My father really, I found recently his like stash of old backpacking gear that he was never able to use once he married my mother. Which was kind of funny because then he gets to jealously look at me as I'm, you know, testing out his 80s camp stove to see if it still works. So we certainly went on a few hikes when I was younger, but they weren't anything too epic or exciting. So, but I think Big Four Ice Caves, I definitely remember finding myself a walking stick for that one. So. Yeah, paved most of the way.
What,
you know?
Is that one, like a mile in?
Oh, probably. When you're 8, though.
Yeah.
Well, they had to close the Gold Basin campground down, too.
Yeah. That was a blow for my parents.
Yeah. So you guys have a list of favorite hikes today, then?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. So obviously, I think that one of our mutual favorite hikes, and actually the first hike that we went on together, is the Chain Lakes Loop up on Mount Baker Highway up there. That is just one of the most gorgeous hikes that we've been on together. We've backpacked it in the pouring down rain, and that was nearly miserable. But just being out in one of our favorite places kind of made it a lot better.
Pretty much North Cascades in general. Maple Pass Loop is incredible. I think I've listened to a few of your shows, Rudy, and like I feel like every other person mentions this trail, but there's a reason for it. It is amazing. Everything up Mount Baker Highway, North Cascades Highway, we love all those trails.
Nice. And what's your favorite brewery up that way then?
Oh, that's a tough question for both of us. Bellingham is growing so much as far as breweries go right now. But I'm going to say Kolschen is my favorite Bellingham brewery. I like their hop bill.
Yeah. Yeah. Kolschen's great. When we're getting out, like on the summer hikes of Mount Baker Highway,
right,
we
definitely
love to stop at the North Fork Brewery and Beer Shrine, I believe they call it.
Yes. Yes.
Cause that one it's just in that unique location up there. They have great beer. They have great food. The pizza is really good.
And great people who work there. The owner and his wife are just fabulous people. Just really wonderful. Always very welcoming. And they're very aware of where they are. You know, they are out kind of in the middle of the woods. And they brew great beer for people who are out enjoying the outdoors. Just really fantastic place.
Cool. Well, that's good. Yeah, you know, we went up last year up to Baker, and I didn't know a place existed at the time, so we drove right by it probably.
Yeah, it is just right there along the main highway there, to the point where if you speed past it a little bit, you are going to miss it.
It's
yeah.
easy to miss.
It's very easy to miss.
Even if you know where it is, you're going, you know, 50, 55 miles an hour down that road, and it's like, it's coming up. It's coming up. We got to slow down, you know?
Yep. Well, cool. So you mentioned backpacking. Have you guys done a lot of that? If so, what are your favorite trips?
We have gone backpacking. We've gone backpacking about twice together. We have a very horrible track record for picking weekends when it pours down rain. Weekends where it's like 50% chance of rain. And so like it always lands on tails and we get that 50% chance of rain. But we are committed to really enjoying the backpacking experience at some point.
Yeah, we haven't given up yet. Our first venture was Lily Lake in the Chuckanuts.
Oh, yeah.
It was just like a one-night thing. It rained, and it kind of sucked. But then last year, I think Rachel mentioned this earlier, we went up to Chain Lakes, and we were planning a two-night backpack trip on the Chain Lakes Loop. And it really dumped on us. I mean, we got so wet that we turned it into a one-nighter. We were like, okay, we're done.
Yeah.
So we got out of there. But, we're hoping this year to get out and do a little bit more backpacking. We have a few places in mind that we'd like to spend the night at.
I think just to put it in perspective, on the time when we hiked to Chain Lakes and stayed overnight, we never saw the lakes because cloud cover and rain was so thick that even from one of the ridges right above the lakes, you couldn't see it in front of you. You were maybe 100 feet away and you couldn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of like sliding down a hill to get to the lake below you to get some water to make oatmeal that morning. And you're hoping that you're heading towards the lake because you can't see it in front of you.
Yeah. I think most people that have done a lot of backpacking know exactly what you're talking about.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
We've all been there.
So unfortunately, that's been the majority of the times we've gone backpacking. That has been the conditions.
Two out of two.
Oh, fun. Well, I do have a question about your backpacking, even though you don't haven't gone a whole bunch. But have you guys tried the Pat's Backcountry? The beer?
Oh. I don't think I have, no.
Oh, you're talking about, like, those kits that you can take out?
The brewing
yeah.
Brew out there.
That you carbonate out there. Yeah.
No, we haven't
done that.
Oh, okay. Well,
It's been on the radar for sure.
Yeah, I think we've definitely asked somebody at Washington Trails if they need us to do like a gear spotlight on that. But you know, no takers yet. So.
Cool. Yeah, I picked one up and I've used it a few times, and I don't like to drink a whole lot on the trail, but we were base camped and I was actually working with the PCTA on a trip, and yeah, it was good. I mean, you know, once I figured it out, it does take a little while to kind of figure out, but it's pretty good beer for what it is.
Well, it's good to know.
Yeah. So with that, you just bring in like those concentrated little packets, right? And then you use like some filtered water to add to it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then it has a carbonation system of some sort, I would assume.
There's also some packets of like some dried, I don't know what it is, but you know, it's like carbonator, it's called.
Right. And, so probably some form of like powdered CO2 of some sort.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and then a lot of shaking involved too.
Right. You have to aerate that up. Yeah.
But it's good though. But yeah. Well, I'll be curious to read your article on that one when you guys finally get it going.
Yeah.
So what's your guys' scariest trip?
Ooh.
Or maybe like something that happened on the trail that freaked you out a little bit.
So not with Brandon, but years ago I was in Arizona and I was at Tonto Natural Bridge, which is a crazy little state park out in the middle of kind of nowhere, Arizona, and was hiking along with my high school boyfriend, of course. And there was a couple in front of us and they said, "Oh, hey, you know, I just wanted to let you know that there's a rattlesnake up ahead right off the trail." And I am scared to death of rattlesnakes, we'll say, in the lightest terms possible. And so I was at that point just petrified. I'm like, there's a snake ahead of us. It's going to bite me. We are not prepared for this. I am in shorts. This is not okay. So I'm being, you know, coaxed down the trail at this point. You know, got through the whole thing. It was fine. We got down to the bottom. The bridge was beautiful, and so I was feeling, you know, quite a bit less scared of the impending snake bite at that point, just awed by the majesty of nature. And then as we're heading back to the car, you know, right in the parking lot, there was some tall grass, and I'm just walking past it, you know, we're on our way to get some postcards or something like that, and suddenly I hear, and of course there's a snake right in the parking lot. So that was quite terrifying for me. Not necessarily dangerous at that point, but just, you know, not something I wanted to encounter on the trail.
Oh, for sure. Wow. How about you, Brandon?
I haven't had many scary experiences locally, but I think all of the risky or scary experiences that I had were last year in Utah. My buddy and I were on like a 2-month national park road trip, and we spent a good like 3 weeks of that time in Utah. We hiked up to Angel's Landing, which is kind of a terrifying hike in its own right, just because there's so many people and just this sheer drop off without any safety protection or anything. We almost got hit by lightning at Canyonlands, and that was due to our own stupidity. we should not have been out there. But the scariest thing was, we were, just north of Salt Lake City hiking in a place called Waterfall Canyon. And it's like a mile and a half out, 1,000 feet of gain per mile. So it's a pretty tough little hike. And we got up there, and as far as we knew, we were the only people there. So we were just hanging out, you know, checking out the waterfall. And we heard some rocks tumbling. And so we turned and we saw this young woman was probably about 40 feet above us. And she had been climbing up this sheer rock face of the right next to the waterfall, and she's falling down. And just tumbling.
Oh, wow.
And she, you know, she hit the ground and she was out cold. We ran over and, I mean, we both thought she was gone because falling from that height, really is just not something that, you know,
many
you would
come
think,
back from.
Yeah, yeah, not something you would think someone could survive. And so we're like, okay. So I called 911. My buddy checks her pulse, and she actually was breathing, but she was unconscious. And so we had search and rescue come out, and it took them a while to get there. So we had to stay on the line with 911 to keep her stabilized and everything. Really fortunate that we had cell phone reception because you know, there was really nobody else around. And so the 911 operators and the search and rescue team were great. They got out there. They ended up airlifting her out. She had all kinds of, you know, broken bones, and she had to go through months of surgeries and physical therapy. But last I checked, she was walking again. So
which is just amazing. Just amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. Yeah, that's really scary. Honestly, that's a very, very scary moment.
Yeah, it was terrifying. And, you know, you're looking at a life or death moment there. And we did the best we could. And the search and rescue guys are amazing. I really appreciate what they did. And so have a lot more respect for them now. Really think about it much until you're in that situation.
Yeah, you were firsthand right there. And that kind of reminds me, I don't know if you guys ever heard of the book Iger Dreams, John Krakauer. It's a bunch of his short stories from that he wrote for, I believe, like multiple different publications. But he went to go climb Iger Mountain, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. It's a straight-faced mountain, one of the hardest mountains to climb because of the wind changes.
Right.
And as they're approaching, somebody fell from higher than what you're talking about, like 100 feet or more, right in front of them. And the person stands up, looks at Krakauer and his hiking and his climbing partner, and hands them all of his gear. It says, "Here, I quit." And walked away. And it's a pretty amazing story there, too.
That is incredible.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
And then you're supposed to climb it after that, you know?
Right. Yeah. Oh, I feel like this is such a good life decision.
Yeah. Pretty cool book, though, if you want to check it out.
Oh, definitely.
So what do you guys, what about funny stories? Obviously, somebody falling off a cliff is not funny.
No, not at all. We were kind of talking about this earlier. I kind of feel like those funny stories are not funny at the time, but become funny in hindsight. We definitely had just a horrible... now hilarious. I mean, we were hiking up to a Skyline Divide up in Bellingham there, in North Cascades. And it was the middle of horsefly season. And it was one of those just May days that by a fluke, it's about 85 degrees out. And it's not a hard hike whatsoever, but it was taking just so much longer because you're constantly swatting off these little biting flies, and it's 85 degrees and you're too hot and you want some more water, but you don't want to stop on the trail because the moment you stop, you're being bit by a fly. It was now in hindsight comical, but at the time just the most miserable about mile and a half of my entire life at that point.
Wow.
Yeah. It was like, it was so bad that, like, you know, we're in shorts and you would slap your leg to get these flies, and like four of them would fall off, you know. They were just, it was a swarm of these little biting flies.
And biting you through your t-shirt, just not, they're ruthless. Ruthless.
Yeah, I think people that haven't been up there before and experienced that, I don't think they really understand. It's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Well, and of course, we didn't have any, like, actual bug spray. We were completely unprepared for it. We had, like, sunscreen, I think, and that helped a little bit, but...
Yeah, for whatever off-brand of sunscreen we had, they did not like. So we were just slathering on sunscreen at any moment just to keep the flies out. That was pretty funny.
Yeah, I experienced something sort of similar up at the Walt Bailey Trail by the Cutthroat Lake. So, and my buddy, who never hiked, and I don't think he's probably been on a hike since, was just screaming, "They're eating me alive!"
Oh, yes. I mean,
it was just horrible. Yeah.
Yeah. And the, I would say our backpacking at Chain Lakes was also, now in hindsight, funny. I don't think I've ever spent such a long time in such close quarters with Brandon. We spent quite a bit of time just in the tent complaining about how bad it was to one another.
Yeah, I was like, okay, so are we going to eat dinner tonight? Like, are we going to go out in the rain and try and start up the stove and everything? And we did. It was miserable, but we did eat.
And, yes. I think probably one of the maddest times I've ever been at you was when you got water, like came in the tent and dripped all over my finally dry pillow. And I just wanted to throttle you for that one. We made it through.
I'm sure it was your fault for having the pillow there.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, clearly. Yeah. I mean, but, you know, the joys of backpacking. That's why we all keep doing it, right?
That's right. So what do you guys carry in your pack on day hikes? A lot of people carry the tent essentials, you know. Do you guys do that for sure or not always?
I think we, between the two of us, have the tent essentials kind of spread out. I think the one thing that we're probably pretty bad at is keeping a form of map with us. But generally, we do try and stick to trails that either we know are pretty clearly signed or have at least a guidebook with us that has some of the twisting turns there for us. But I think a hard map is probably the one tent essential we are pretty bad at not having with us.
Yeah, and I tend to lean on technology perhaps a little more than I should. And, you know, I like to take GPS tracks on the trail and use digital maps. But, of course, you can... your battery can run out and then you're mapless. So I haven't really had a problem with that, but we'll see.
Yeah.
I've kind of been in the same boat myself, but I am signed up for the navigational course through the Mountaineers. So hopefully maybe I'll be inspired to start carrying a real map.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's definitely something that we always joke, like how would one ever learn all the names of those mountains out there? And I think that it's just one of those things that both of us feel a twinge of neglect that we aren't more map centric when it comes to hiking. So
for sure. Well, when you're caught in those clouds, you know, the thick fog like that too, like you guys were, I mean, you have no bearing.
Right. And I think that luckily we were just in an area that is so well trafficked as far as hiking trails goes that was what saved us. But had we not been, I think we would have at that point turned around. I don't think that we would have attempted a trail that we weren't familiar with that such a small visibility to ourselves there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. What about food? Do you guys have a certain food you guys like to take out on hikes?
Ooh, you are a peanuts guy. He is notorious for bringing just a big, huge plastic bag full of peanuts with us.
Well,
he's always crunching.
That's partly because I've been a vegetarian for like 10 years, so I don't bring beef jerky.
He's not a beef jerky guy,
So I have to have an alternative protein, right?
Yeah.
And so peanuts are great. But other than that, I don't know. I don't really have a thing. We sometimes will grab Subway and take it with us if we're lazy, but yeah.
Or like an artisan sandwich if we you know, gotten paid that week or something like that, you know. Veggies, I think I definitely love to bring like snap peas when they're in season. That's always a great one, just because they're like 90% water, so that's it's another way to bring water along with you, which is lovely. Yeah, veggies, I think bananas we did for a while.
Oh yeah, one thing that we used to bring out a lot, I don't know if we do it as much anymore, but there's this company in Bellingham called Baker's Breakfast Cookies.
Oh yes.
And I love them. Those are kind of our go-to like energy bar.
Yeah. And we were doing the wild squirrel nut butter for a while. That and either, you know, bananas or apples or something like that. Just a squirt of that on your piece of fruit there. They have one that's got like espresso beans mixed in it, like the vanilla espresso sunflower, whatever. That one's good because right. That gives you a little caffeine to just propel you up that mountain. That's a great one.
So what about your guys' footwear, socks and stuff?
Oh, I think we are both in the right sock camp. Very excited about those. I, for whatever reason, have always been incredibly prone to blisters. So it's nice having those because they certainly have been very helpful in not giving me blisters. And you were the one who turned me on to those, actually, Brandon. So
yeah, I've been wearing those since, like, I don't know, 2008, I think, was when I first got right mm-hmm. socks. And they're great. I tend to wear through them pretty quick. So recently I started trying out those, I think they're called Darn Tough socks.
Yeah, I have a pair of those as well.
And those are wool, I think. But they really are tough. I mean, yeah. I haven't had any problems with wearing through those, so...
If you had to use a descriptive word, tough would be the right word.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, accurate marketing.
And you always love a good pun. Darn. Like darn socks. I love it. Yeah. My sister actually sent me a pair of smart wool that she got up in Alaska. She lives up in Alaska, so she gets to send me all of that really great for the northerner there.
Mm-hmm.
Love it.
Some nice thick socks.
Yeah.
What about your footwear then?
Footwear. I like to wear trail runners when I'm hiking. Not really much of a boot fan. I like to go a little bit more lightweight. In the last couple years, I've been wearing Salomon shoes. They make some great waterproof trail runners. And then what about you?
Oh, gosh. I had a pair of Morels for probably about 10 years at least. My dad bought them for me when we were doing a lot of off-roading, and I needed to be able to jump under the Jeep and help out in the mud if need be. So I had those for quite a while. They finally started to just literally deteriorate. So I also picked up a pair of Solomon, since Brandon has so much to say about them and sing of their praises. And also Solomon comes in some really wonderful colors. So I was able to pick up a pair of teal green ones that actually match perfectly my rain jacket. So that's just color coordination that you can't find elsewhere.
Always important for the ladies, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Life is too short to just wear black on the trail. So I love to be a little bit of a rainbow out there. Visibility is king there.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it's good for hunting season too.
Yeah, you can't miss me. You can't miss me.
Well, yeah. Okay, so when you guys do go backpacking, what do you guys wear or have for a tent?
Tent? Oh.
We've got a little two-person Kelty backpacking tent. We kind of inherited it.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
Yes. Just one of the perks of, you know, being a Washington Trails trail correspondent is every once in a while they have a gear giveaway, and we were the lucky people to reply first to the email on that one. So Brandon scored us a nice tent. So yeah, we we've taken it out a couple times. I mean, it lived through the rainstorm and stayed, kept us dry. I mean, honestly, the only water that came in through it was water that we drug in with us because it was so wet. I definitely say that that is a great tank.
It's a good little tank. We kind of learned the hard way with our first trip to Willy Lake, and we had this kind of cheap backpacking tent that was like, was that something you got off eBay?
Oh, I got it off eBay, yeah.
For like $40.
Maybe.
And so like that was not waterproof.
No.
And
I was a graduate student. I had no money to spend on tents.
Yeah, we tried to go cheap in the beginning, and we realized like it's worth it to make the investment in quality gear.
Very much so, yeah.
Yeah, and well, especially with your guys' luck of weather.
Yes, yes. We are very thankful for that Kelpie tent. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool perk. Yeah. What about your sleeping bags and pads?
Let's see. So, what is my sleeping bag? I think I have a Wetzel sleeping bag. It packs down really easy, which is great. And then I, as a graduation present to myself from graduate school, I took myself out and bought myself a nice backpacking bag. So I got myself a nice Deuter, and then I got an REI Aerials sleeping pad. So that has been it's been lovely. I love having that with me. I was able to use it a couple nights, even when I was in Japan before my bed was delivered in my apartment there. So I slept on that for a couple nights.
Oh, wow.
Which was nice. It was nice to have that with me.
Yeah. And my, the sleeping bag I am using right now is a Teton Sports backpacking bag. I think it's like rated at 20 degrees or something, which does me pretty good all year round, because we don't typically go backpacking in like colder conditions than that.
Right.
And then as for a pad, I have like I think it's Climate is the brand. I don't know. I got this thing like last year when I was going on a trip in the Olympics with my buddy, and it's like one of those inflatable pads. They're air.
Pretty similar to mine.
Yeah.
Yours is maybe a little comfier, but hey.
It's pretty good, actually. I like it.
Holds up pretty good.
Yeah.
Nice. What about what about your stove?
Oh, the stove. We were using my father, as I mentioned before, I inherited one from the 80s. Maybe even late 70s.
Oh, so you guys were using that one?
Yeah, it's like a Coleman. We used it one time. It was a little temperamental for our liking. It needed a lot of pumping and making sure that certain valves were open. And probably it looked a little bit like a spaceship. I think we called it like Marty the Martian or something like that. It became its own little living entity with us. But I think we are going to move on from that one to something a little more
user-friendly. Might get one of those like little MSR pocket rocket things, you know, those little, they're not too expensive, and they're pretty small, lightweight. I also have like a 80s era stove from my parents that we have not used.
Yes.
It's a little bit bulkier than I like to deal with, and so I think this year it's probably time to upgrade.
Luckily
for the two of us going out together, I mean, you can distribute the weight so much easier between two people. So we can maybe branch out a little bit, and one of us carry the stove and the other carry the fuel for it. So that's always a positive.
Yeah, that's good. And if your stove has a nickname, then it's time to get a new one.
Yeah. Cool. Oh, Marty.
So, what about like your wear? Like we've had one of the gals I interviewed really liked her hiking skirt. Do you guys have any kind of outerwear that you guys like to mention?
I definitely live by my compression tights. As somebody who has suffered with shin splints. I don't know why, but I am just far more prone to shin splints than anybody I have ever met. And I love my compression tights because they definitely have helped a lot with that. I think I have a CRX brand for a while, and then I just got a new pair that, oh gosh, what is the, I can't remember off the top of my head what the brand name on that one is, but they are, I think they're out of Australia, and they are fabulous pair of tights. Just really nice. And then I also like to layer up in the winter with a pair of fleece-lined leggings underneath, and it gives me, it keeps me plenty warm, but I'm also able to move a lot easier in them. So I appreciate those.
Nice.
Yeah, so I guess if we're talking about pants,
oh yeah,
I go for the totally fashionable zip-off hiking pants, and much to the chagrin of my partner.
I wouldn't say chagrin. Like, I'm all function over fashion when it comes to you.
Well, yeah. Well, those are really they are functional. I mean,
I guess it would depend on how high up they zip off at.
Yeah, they definitely are above the knee. I'll say that.
Yeah, just a little above. Yeah.
I just used them last weekend. I was out at Baker Lake, and we hiked in, and it was pretty warm, and we got out there, and it's like really sunny, and it's like, man, I wish I had some shorts.
Wait, I do.
Yeah, I totally do. So I just zipped them right off, you know, and it's really nice to have that option and that functionality. So that's my go-to hiking pant.
Nice. Well, I also like that style myself. I think it's just the right thing for guys to wear. I've seen some ladies out there with it too, though. So
yeah,
And we can sense you judging them, Rachel. Don't worry.
No, I don't judge them. I don't judge them at all. Honestly, I just have never looked good in a boot cut, and that's about all they make for ladies' pants when it comes to that. So, I do have my own. I'm planning on sewing myself up a pair of nice little trekking shorts for the summer, but it's been pretty cold winter, so I've been okay with my leggings at this point. So
do you have any gear that you've made?
Since you want something that's really nice and breathable, and also you know, if it does stretch, that's a plus. And that's kind of I do sew, but stretchable fabric is a whole other ballpark to sew with. So that's something that I've been experimenting with, but I haven't been successful in yet. So we'll see. The summer might be the summer.
Cool. That'd be kind of a fun project. What about rain gear? What do you guys have for rain gear? Do you guys do an umbrella?
No.
No. We're Seattleites. Why would you ever have an umbrella?
Jackets.
Jackets, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I have like a Columbia rain shell that I use.
Yeah, your soft shell's nice.
It's really pretty effective. And I like it because, like, with a lot of rain gear, it's either water resistant, so you still get wet, but it's breathable, or it's completely waterproof and it's not breathable at all. And so you're like sweating and you're just getting wet anyways. So like, this is kind of a nice happy medium because it's waterproof, but it has like the pit zips so you can let it breathe a little bit.
Nice. I'm always, always looking to unzip something, aren't you?
Oh, this guy.
Yeah.
What about future hiking goals?
Ooh, we actually, not too long ago, put together it's literally called the ultimate list. So it was kind of a little bit of a project for the two of us. It was an assignment that we gave to each other that we were supposed to pick our top five each, top five hikes, and then top three sort of dream hikes. So these are hikes that like either are going to require one or more of us to take some time off work So these are usually backpacking hikes in farther destinations. And then we got together and we had a little bit of a powwow and kind of picked between the two of the list and developed our top four must-do hikes and our top three stretch hikes. So our number one is Hidden Lake Lookout. Our number two is to go back to Maple Pass. Number three, we would love to get out to Glacier Peak, especially since there's been so much coverage of the reopening of so many trails out there due to the road out there being fixed up. And also, it would just be great to give that economy a little bit of a boost. The Oso landslide just did a number on that area, and we'd love to give it some time. And then number four is a personal favorite. I would really love to do Rachel Lake just because, you know, namesake reasons. And then our bigger ones, this is kind of a stretch. Do you want to give those a little run through over there, Brennan?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So we want to do some backpacking up in British Columbia. That's something that's kind of been on our radar for the last couple of years. And we sort of attempted it a while back, but the weather did not cooperate. And so we ended up staying in a hotel, but we're hoping to reattempt BC backpacking. And then we want to get down into the Mount Rainier area and do Spray Park again. We did that once as a day hike, but we'd like to backpack it. And the last one there was, what is that, Wananta? I don't know how to pronounce that.
I'm not sure either.
Somewhere in Oregon?
Yeah, it's somewhere in Oregon. Yeah, in like in the Columbia River Basin there, near Mahaltma Falls, there's some beautiful gorges out there. So we were thinking about doing kind of an ultimate Oregon camping loop out there. So
yeah, I think there's a brewery right by one of those waterfalls too.
There are so many breweries in Oregon that if you throw a rock, you're probably going to end up in a brewery parking lot.
Yeah.
Well, and I might mention that one of my favorite stops out in Darrington is Rivertime Brewery. They're good.
Yeah, we'll have to check that out because we really do want to get down into Darrington. And again, like she was saying, the Glacier Peak area there. That's an area that we just have not spent any time in. So now that the Suadal River Road is open again, we'd really like to get out there.
So you're thinking about Image Lake or?
I don't think we spent much time researching it, really.
Oh, okay.
Heard that, I think, is it Green Mountain?
Green Pass.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one. Just whatever is accessible, because I know that, like, there's been some ongoing efforts to restore the trails in that area.
Very
since
much so,
the road
yeah.
was out for so long.
Right. I mean, nature takes over again, and then we have to go back and rebuild on those trails. We really kind of were very much inspired, obviously, by the WTA issue on Glacier Peak being accessible again, kind of looked at those trails that they had listed as kind of a great way to access the area that if you're unfamiliar, that was a great issue for that. So
cool. Yeah, Green Mountains, honestly, I always list that as my favorite hike ever.
Mm.
Yeah, but one side note that some people don't know, everybody sees the pictures of the lookout, but it's locked. So just so everybody knows.
Oh, yeah.
Like, a lot of people don't know that, but it's one of the lookouts that you can't go in.
That's good to know. I mean, I didn't know about that, but, you know, some of these you can, some of them you can't, but that's cool.
Yeah, it's a good spot. Are you guys scared of anything on the trail?
Maybe the usual stuff. I mean, you know, a lot of people are scared of bears. I personally have never seen a bear on the trail. Don't really have a fear of black bears, and we don't have to worry about grizzlies so much. It's funny. I actually I got a can of bear spray recently for I think Christmas,
I believe it was a stocking stuffer.
Yeah. Because you know, I'm always out hiking and people worry about me. So.
Oh, parents.
So here's a gift for that. And so we were out at Baker Lake this last weekend, and I decided I needed to learn how to use this thing, right? Because it's like any weapon. You don't wanna like have it in your pack and then not know how to use it when you actually need it. Right. So and it has warnings on the label that say, like, you know, you need to test fire this thing before you are actually in a situation where it's necessary.
Test fire during safe times. Yeah.
So I tried it out, and I mean, wow, it was quite an eye opener. I think it would be very effective against just about anything.
Yes.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I actually kind of have a funny story about people from the area who aren't from the area who have been very scared by it. I wrote an essay for my thesis, actually, for graduate school, about hiking and being a woman on the trail and kind of entering into that world. And my professor was just like, I feel like you don't have enough danger going on in this hiking piece that you've written. Like, there are cougars out there.
Oh, wow.
And it was just one of those moments where I was like, cougars? Like, are you kidding me right now? Like, A, you hardly ever see them. And B, if you're out there and you know what you should be doing, then you shouldn't necessarily be like petrified of it. But she definitely was the type of person who was so scared by the idea of cougars that she just doesn't do that much hiking. And I find that that's very indicative of the fact that maybe, you know, this knowledge of what to do in that situation isn't readily available right to those who are casual hikers.
Where were you guys hiking?
Kind of a detriment to the community there. So
yeah, exactly. And you're sure she wasn't talking about like 40-year-old women hitting on Brandon?
Oh no, she was definitely not. She
that would actually scare me more.
She right was a lesbian, so she wasn't worried about that. But yeah, no, she was like, I was like, cougars, and she's like, yeah, you know, like panthers, mountain lions. I was like, yes, I am aware of them, but I never worried too much about them. You just have to get on a rock and yell at them, and they usually get scared and run away, but okay.
They're big cats.
Yeah.
So do you guys practice leave no trace? And
yes.
To what extent?
Yes. I am a former Girl Scout, so leave no trace is kind of one of those things that they hammer in very early on. And I think just living, especially in the area that we live in here in the Pacific Northwest, conservation and being a land steward is kind of just ingrained into the culture up here. So we are definitely leave no trace people. I think perhaps the worst thing that we'll do is Brandon will throw a peanut shell every once in a while on the trail. But otherwise, I mean, we pack in what we pack out what we pack in, you know? So
that's good. What about fires? Do you guys ever build fires out there? You guys haven't done a whole lot of backpacking. But
yeah, I think for us, fires are great when you're car camping. But in the few times we've gone backpacking, well, for one, it's been raining, so it just hasn't really made sense. But I don't think it's as necessary when you're in the backcountry because you're spending more time on the trail and you're kind of exhausted. You just want to eat and pass out. So generally, we're not doing that if we're backpacking.
The other thing about being in the backcountry is that, I mean, it is a space of wilderness. And so my thoughts always when I'm in a space of wilderness is that this is not my home. I am a visitor here, and I wouldn't necessarily go into somebody else's home and light a fire. So I'm certainly not going to light a fire in a place where it's for animals, it's for nature, and fire is not necessarily something that needs to get started unless it's through a wildfire or lightning strike of some sort. So it's
that's a good way to look at it.
we don't need to bring it in, you know, with us. So.
Yeah, I like that. Your answer was better than Brandon's.
Well, you know.
It usually is.
I'm just kidding. That's good. What about dogs? You guys own dogs?
No.
We are cat people. We are very okay with being cat people. People who love dogs, but I find it very taxing to have a dog on the trail with me. They're just boundless energy, and sometimes that's just not what I need with me.
Yeah, it's like one more thing to worry about, and so now we don't have any dogs. But it's funny, I'm actually currently writing a story about hiking with dogs, even though I don't have a dog. It's a piece that was assigned to me for a publication that I write for. So I'm like, it's all research based. This morning I was spent lot of time looking up trails that you can take dogs to and all that. So
making a lot of cold calls to friends who have dogs. Like, how do you hike with your dog, man?
What does this entail exactly?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Here's like kind of something that I just thought of. So last weekend I took my girls up to Baker River. And the trail splits, one of the trails curls around and hooks up with where you were at, Brandon, and on the Baker Lake Trail. Well, I saw this couple come, and they were all packed out, ready to camp, and their dog had the vest pack on and everything, and they were ready to go. And they were heading over around the lake. And the next couple I saw had, like, a little dog that didn't belong on their lap type of thing.
Right.
And they were, and I said, well, hey, where are you guys heading? And they said, well, we can only go to the bridge because then it enters into the North Cascades National Park and we can't bring dogs in there. And I was like thinking, man, how interesting that they knew the rules better than the couple that was really overprepared.
Right. Yeah, that is kind of an interesting thing, but I think that that just speaks to the fact that they know their dog's limitation, right? So that they're probably much more mindful of where their dog can and cannot go. But that is very interesting. And I think that the rule with the North Cascades is kind of it's one of those sort of areas that seems sort of gray matter, because in wilderness, I've heard it that they count heartbeats. So stock animals can be counted in a party group, but it's interesting to think about how dogs fit into that situation. I mean, and that's not necessarily a rule that we have researched that much, because we do not bring dogs with us.
Right, you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And when I was out this last weekend up at Baker Lake, we actually did have a dog in our group who is a German Shepherd. And we came to a creek crossing, which normally has a bridge across it. It's like a fallen tree that's been turned into a bridge and has a rail on one side. But it had been like displaced in the creek, so it was not
slightly
easy to access. You had to like rock hop to it. And so we all got across, but the German Shepherd was having a really tough time with it. And so we spent like 20 minutes trying to coax him across. And we got him to do it eventually. But sometimes I think hiking with dogs just presents like a whole different set of challenges.
Right, because it's a creature that you have to reassure about a situation that they're unfamiliar with, that you don't have the language to reassure them with. So that seems just too much sometimes, I think.
Well, yeah, and you even think, like, probably when you're leaving the house, like, oh, yeah, we can do this, no problem. The dog will just go where we go, but then you just never know.
Right.
Yeah, you never know.
So you guys have mentioned WTA or WT a lot. Have you guys done any trail work?
Yeah, actually, I just did my first trail work party with WTA like a week or two ago up at Oyster Dome. And it kind of kicked my butt. I mean, we volunteer as writers for the magazine, and I think that's kind of our calling. But the physical work, man, it's hard. Like, I don't know if you've been out doing that or not, but I really learned.
It's a tough hike.
I really appreciate the work that's put in now that I've done it. I mean, we packed in all the tools and, you know, spent a good solid day out there working the trail, and it is a good experience. I hope to do it again.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that I have definitely wanted to get more involved with, just for whatever reason, have not been able to link up with a work party at this point, up until now, but I'm going to make a concerted effort towards that this summer. That's kind of a goal I think both of us have set on that. And one thing that I especially love about WTA is their outreach to youth in that matter. They sponsor a lot of work parties with junior high and high school kids. And I think that that's really exciting just because I think that that's the group that we need to be targeting right now with land stewardship. They're the next generation, and they're going to be the ones who are helping make these decisions about these trails and are the ones that will lose out if we don't make a concerted effort for it. So that's exciting for me.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. I mean, I didn't know anything about that when I was a kid. So yeah, learning younger is better.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Luckily I had some friends that, showed me the way.
Yes.
Not everybody has that. So now you have Brandon and he can show you the way.
Oh yeah. He can show
you the way.
Yeah.
Follow me.
Yeah. Right off the trail. It's fine.
So with you guys' website and stuff, do you guys do photography on the trail a lot then?
So I'm going to defer to Brandon. He is our prime photographer. So he'll give you a little rundown on how he does it there.
Yeah. When we first started the blog, it was like, we kind of had our set roles. Rachel was the writer and I was the photographer. And over the last couple of years, it's kind of turned into we both do a little bit of everything. But I shoot with a Nikon digital SLR. And, you know, it's extra weight on the trail, but I think it's worth it for the photo quality. Lately, I have become a bit lazier. And sometimes I'll just bring my phone and it does a pretty good job, but I prefer to hike with my SLR.
Yeah, I found with the blogging, just if that's all you're going to do, I do pretty good with my phone, but you know, if you're ever wanting to do anything bigger with your pictures, obviously you're limited with cell phone pictures.
Yeah, it's fine for blogging and social media, but like if I'm shooting for a magazine or something, it has to be, you know, the best quality. So
sure,
yeah.
All right, well, before we get into our final questions, how do people get a hold of you guys? What's your guys' website and Facebook and Twitter and all that?
Yeah, so our website is beersatthebottom.com. And we're also on Facebook. If you just search for Beers at the Bottom on Facebook, you'll find us. And we're on Twitter at BeersATB.
It's the time of the podcast that we ask our guests some questions. They don't know these questions. They've never heard them before. So let's see what they have to answer. But first, let's talk about Cascade Hiker hats and bumper stickers. Go to CascadeHikerPodcast.com. Check out the hats and bumper stickers. Support the podcast. You can also donate. There's a donate button on each of our show notes. Go there, find pictures of our guests. Now enjoy the rest of the show. What piece of gear do you consider not replaceable? Do you guys have anything on your packs that maybe one of the other person says, well, I can't believe you still carry that, or maybe it's your favorite thing?
I have a very funny thing. I absolutely adore my golf towel from Japan. It has a Manekineko on it, and I absolutely adore it. And I bring it with me everywhere, even though it's very ugly and bright yellow.
It is pretty ugly. I don't know. I have the basics. And then I also carry a towel. And lately, just like in the last month or so, I've been carrying this like section of a yoga mat that's been like cut into thirds or quarters for, you know, like when you want to take a lunch break and you want to sit down, you just lay your little mat out and you've got a nice dry cushy spot to sit on.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally unnecessary, but I like it.
Yeah. And I could think that other people would be like, man, I should do that.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I actually was like kind of embarrassed to use it the first time, thinking, because I took it to this WTA trail party, and I'm like, oh, these guys are hardcore. They're gonna judge me.
They're gonna make fun of me.
And I get there, and like everybody else had one. It was incredible.
You know, in Girl Scouts, we had a thing. It was called a sit-upon. There's a name for that. You have your own little sit-upon there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Official.
Official.
You just earned yourself a badge.
Yay!
Brownie points.
That's, yeah. Do you ever take alcohol hiking?
Well.
We, you know, we do call it Beers at the Bottom for a specific reason. I just have to say, there, you can't beat a draft beer. Like, you cannot beat a fresh draft pour at a brewery that you absolutely love. But we have been known to pack in cans. A, they're lightweight, and B, better for the environment. So, but we prefer to pack in the highest ABV can we possibly can.
Yeah.
There's so many cans in that sentence. I think last time we brought in a couple of Brothers Imperial IPA from Fremont. Fremont is a big fan of outdoor recreation, so that is why they switched cans, and that is one that we've packed in before.
Yeah, like, okay, we write about hiking and beer, so you'd think we might do this more than we actually do. Generally, we do not take any alcohol with us when we're going hiking. And I think we might do it more if we're going to go backpacking, because, like,
right.
Oh, it's nice to have a beer at camp. But if we're going on a day hike, I don't want to be stumbling out on on the
right.
trail,
yeah,
after
definitely.
A couple of high ABV IPAs. So we usually wait until we get back, and we go to a brewery instead.
Yeah, we'd rather save that space for water or something that's going to keep us a little hydrated out there on the trail.
Yeah, that's better. That's my choice too. Yeah. Do you guys filter all of your water on the trail? Or typically, you guys are day hiking a lot. You guys packing in most of your water? Or do you
yeah,
guys...
like if we're day hiking, we usually bring a couple water bottles. I almost always carry a Life Straw, which is just like a little filter, super lightweight, just as a backup, you know, in case I run out. And it's come in handy multiple times. But if we're backpacking, we use a combination of filters, tablets, and then Rachel just got a new, what is it, a UV
device?
It's a device.
UV, yeah. A UV filter there, which is really nice. We haven't had a chance yet to use it, but we're very excited about that. Yeah, that was kind of a Christmas gift, so that was very exciting. But yeah, Brandon's dad is definitely the Life Straw kind of guru for us, so I was definitely given a Life Straw as well. And we've had to take many an obligatory picture of Brandon drinking from various water sources to give to his father, just to prove that the Life Straw has been of use for us there. So
that's good. Yeah, the gift.
Yes. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's right.
He loves those photos.
That's funny. So obviously we talked about bear spray. That's one of my questions I usually ask. What about trekking poles?
I am going to say that I am a very awkward hiker when it comes sometimes. Balance is perhaps like a not first nature to me. So I am definitely a hands-on kind of scrambler, perhaps more than I should be. So trekking poles just seems like another thing I have to keep track of, including with my feet. So I have not been won over by them yet. But I think Brandon might have a different answer there.
Well, I just got my first pair of trekking poles. I've been hiking for, I don't know, 20 years or something without them. And my sister got me some as an early birthday gift. And I just used them at Baker Lake for the first time. And I'm still getting used to them, but I can see why, you know, people like them for the stability and just to
I'm sure
balance you out. Yeah,
I'm sure creek crossings are much easier.
Totally.
Yeah, it's interesting that you had a creek crossing on your first trip with them.
Yeah, they did come in handy for that.
I know a lot of people pack them, you know, and use them when they need them type thing.
Mm-hmm.
What about hiking books? You guys seem like maybe you read a lot. Do you guys have any hiking books to refer to?
I read tons. I probably mentioned, obviously, that I didn't grow up hiking, but it was always one of those things that I, like, really wanted to get into. Like, my dream self was the hiker kind of thing. So before I even started hiking, I collected quite a few hiking books, Best Wildflower Hikes, 100 Top Hikes in Washington. So we have quite a few hiking books between the two of us, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And again, my parents got us started hiking early. And so they had like these old Mountaineers books, like the Footsore series.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know when those were published. Probably the 80s, maybe the 70s.
My dad even has a couple downstairs kind of thing.
But yeah, like that's what I grew up with. And, you know, I've always been a fan of guidebooks. If you want to talk about like actual, you know, like nonfiction books, Bill Bryson's Walk in the Woods is one that I really enjoyed. Mm-hmm. And he's just a hilarious writer. I've always been a hiker, but like reading his book, his account of the Appalachian Trail, just like really kind of inspired me to get out on the trail even more.
That's good. Yeah, I'm surprised that book hasn't come up in all of my interviews yet. So that's cool.
Right?
That's a good book.
I bet Wild has, though.
a couple people, yeah. Wild, yeah. You know what? I haven't said this yet on the podcast, but Wild is what got me back into hiking. So
that's very interesting.
Yeah,
that's
I'll admit it. Well, you know, when I was a kid, I hiked from Stevens to like Glacier Peak on the Pacific Crest Trail, and it was kind of like I want to hike the whole thing one day, and went away from hiking for quite a while and read the book, and I was like, gosh, I remember my dream. Like, why am I not doing this?
So right.
It was interesting. Yeah. But,
yeah.
I might be the only guy that was inspired by that book.
I don't think you are the only guy.
No, you're not. You're not.
It's kind of interesting to just, bring up Wild since I come from a very, the literary background of it, and there were a lot of people who were big Cheryl Strayed supporters in kind of the more studious literary world, and then kind of felt like she did a little bit of a Hollywood cop-out with her ending and kind of disavowed the book. I had plenty of professors who were like, I was with it 3/4 of the way, and then I saw where she was going, and I was just not for it anymore. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah, that book has been kind of polarizing. Like, you either love it or you hate it. But what I like about it is that it has inspired a lot of people to get out, you know, that otherwise maybe wouldn't be hiking today. And Cheryl Strayed, we've seen her speak a couple times in Bellingham. She's pretty great as a person, and so I appreciate it for what it is.
Yes.
Cool. Well, do you have any other books like that you've read?
Gosh, I'm blanking on books, but I certainly have always loved Wendell Berry's poetry. In The Peace of the Wild Things, I think is definitely one of those poems that I will read in the depths of winter when I perhaps cannot get outside as much as I would like to.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Well, I like that. That's cool. So if you could choose one person to hike with, dead or alive or famous or not, who would you choose and why?
Brandon told me that you were going to ask this question.
I
would hike with Juliette Lowe. She's the founder of the Girl Scouts. And I think that actually she started the Girl Scouts as a way to find a way for women to get outdoors more, especially in a time when, I mean, women were hiking in long skirts in the outback and like in the backcountry at that point. They were climbing mountains in skirts. So that you would pretty constricting in a lot of ways. So I think that she started the Girl Scouts as a way to just create a space for women in the outdoors to belong in their own way. So I would love to hike with Juliet Lowe and just take her out on a trail now and show her how women are conquering mountains at this point.
That's good. You know, you mentioned that she was inspired to get girls outside. And that's funny because I see them outside all the time trying to sell their cookies.
Yeah, right?
Yeah,
right?
It worked.
We're actually staring at a wall of them
right now. Oh, yes. As a former Girl Scout, there is plenty of cookies in my household right now.
Girl Scout cookies. Yeah.
Are they vegan?
Thin Mints are this year, yes. They are. They are vegan.
I have no problem with Girl Scout cookies.
No.
For the record.
Okay. So what about you, Brandon?
I've been trying to get on the trail with Craig Romano the last couple of weeks. I recently interviewed him for a story I was writing, and so hopefully we'll make that happen.
He's just delightful.
Yeah, he's great. He's busy, though. He's really hard to pin down.
Yes, he is.
So there's that. And then, again, I mentioned Bill Bryson earlier. I'd love to go hiking with Bill Bryson. Just for the stories.
I was going to say the stories he'd tell, right? Yeah.
That's good. I like those. Yeah. Craig Romano, that's a really interesting interesting choice. He gets brought up in every single episode, too.
I bet.
Yeah. So far.
Yeah. Well, actually, I've been listening to the podcast, and it sounds like you're going to try and get him on at some point.
Yeah. Just kind of like what you're saying. He's busy. I was talking back and forth online with him today, and same thing, you know, he's just really busy, and that's fine. I plan on doing this for as long as people keep listening, so, you know, I can certainly wait.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, stay persistent. You'll get him.
All right, well, that's my last question is, do you listen to any hiking podcasts?
I should listen to more podcasts, but that's just that level of technology that I have yet to achieve is the podcast. But I know Brandon listens to plenty for the both of us. So
I actually, this is the only hiking podcast that I am currently listening to. I do listen to another podcast, but it's about like travel writing. And
what is that one?
It's called Break Into Travel Writing. And it's actually really a great resource for people who are interested in that. And she has like 70 episodes, I think. And she brings on travel writers, photographers, PR people to talk about all different aspects of the business, how to get into it. And so that's been really helpful for me as a writer and photographer.
And that one's kind of interactive too. Like she asks for questions too for answers. Yeah.
Yeah, she has like a Q&A from the listeners. And so, that's about the only other podcast that I'm currently subscribed to that I listen to regularly.
Nice. Well, hey, thanks for listening to the Cassie and Hiker podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you for putting it on.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, it's been fun. Well, and it's also good to, help get the word out about other people too. You know, I mean, inspire people and help you guys inspire people also.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming on the Cascade Hiker podcast.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
Hey, thanks so much for listening to the show. Go on back to CascadeHikerPodcast.com and, leave me a comment. Tell me what you thought. That's how I know everything's going good or maybe some things are going bad. But maybe you have some ideas there. And if you have some more questions for any of our guests, leave a comment under their episode and maybe we can get them back on and answer some quick questions there. You can send me an email if you don't want to leave a comment. It's ibighiker@gmail, ibighiker@gmail. Give my Facebook page a like, North Cascade Hiker. Follow me on Twitter, @N_CascadeHiking. That's @N_CascadeHiking. I try to give you guys multiple ways to get a hold of me. Give me some comments on the show. and maybe some ideas for some guests. Thanks again for listening to the show. Here's a little bit more of that Whiskey Fever track, Tall Grass.
You were sweet like honey on a heartbeat. You were fine like wine in the sunshine. I could feel you coming on strong. Could never be wrong, could never be wrong. See her laying down in the tall grass, playing mandolin in a white dress. I come running when I hear that song. It could never be wrong, it could never be wrong. Where you wanna run, baby, I'll run too. I would leave this world for a beautiful girl if I could.